through.
Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
This is the Hour of Truth, the unmitigated Hour of Truth. If you are afraid, it's because you can't handle the truth. We've got a great show tonight. I'm Dave. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. We're going to have Terry Varner along from a newly formed group called Replace Roy. Imagine with me this. You walk into the local bookstore, and you buy two books, and you go up to the counter, and the two books total $27.50. And the clerk at the counter asks, well, where are you from? And you say, well, what does that matter? He says, I've got to figure your tax. And you say, well, I'm from Muskogee, Oklahoma. The clerk then has to look up the tax for the state tax for Oklahoma and apply that to your bill. He can't collect the state tax for the tax for the state of Missouri, even though you go down to the local mall here in Missouri and buy the book. He has to collect the tax for Oklahoma. That's exactly what the internet tax is all about. So imagine what that does to sales taxes for the state of Missouri, and imagine what it does to the poor little mom and pop guy down there who sells books and now has to keep track of 50 different tax codes and apply those to every purchase that comes through the store. This is what Roy Blunt did to try to level the playing field to make your internet shop located in Springfield, Missouri, equal to the mom-and-pop bookstore. We're going to have Terry along in just a minute, and we're going to talk about fixing the big problem. And the big problem isn't the internet tax. That's the little problem. The big problem is Roy Blunt. And then later in the show, we're going to talk to Chief Tony Kirk. He's going to talk about the Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association. They're having a big meeting in, ironically, St. Charles. I say ironically because St. Charles is the latest place to say, well, we don't need no stinking sheriff. And so I think it's great that the CSPOA is hosting their convention in St. Charles. But listen up now. On Friday, last Monday, I made a prediction. And I predicted that something was going to happen to push Benghazi back off of the headlines. Benghazi was getting a little too hot. Last Friday, right along with my prediction, suddenly the mainstream media starts getting wind of the IRS having charged Tea Party groups and conservative groups wrongly when they filed for tax-exempt status. Over the weekend, this thing kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper. Today, of course, the president announced that the IRS was an independent agency, bullshit, and that that he would be investigating to see what went on here. There was no excuse for this. The mainstream media has been fed this and even invited to investigate this. Harry Reid and some other prominent Democrats are calling for committee investigations of the Democratic Executive Committee. Does this smell bad to anyone but me? I mean, does this smell like, oh, let's find something to get the talking heads busy for 3 hours per show per day? And sure enough, you turn on the radio today and you listen to talk radio, and nobody's talking about Benghazi anymore. Even though witness after witness is still coming before this select committee and exposing damning evidence against the administration about the Benghazi thing, suddenly everyone wants to talk about the IRS. I wish I hadn't told you so, but I did. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Terry's going to be with us, and we're going to talk a little bit about getting rid of Roy Blunt. I've got a feeling.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking. Ain't that great? Okay, we're back here with a man who is both a great friend of mine, one of my best friends, and someone who is proof of the fact that you don't have to agree on everything in the world politically to be good friends and good neighbors. Terry Varner is a person who doesn't talk a lot and does have a lot of brains, and we're going
I was just going to ask you about that, Dave.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you played that segment just for me, brains.
No, not at all. So, Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing well, David. Doing well.
So Roy's been a bigger letdown even so far this term than ever before, and we're stuck with the guy for four more years. What are we going to do about that, Terry?
Well, as you know, we've been discussing this situation for some time, and you're right, we're stuck with him for four more years. But the good thing is that it gives us 4 years to start working on finding a replacement and getting him in office instead of the establishment pushed Roy Blunt. Roy Blunt is, let's face it, I said establishment, he is the king of establishments. He pals around with the likes of John McCain and Lindsey Graham in D.C. He doesn't live in Missouri anymore, really. He lives in Washington, D.C. He's lost touch with the folks in Missouri, as far as I'm concerned. And obviously, I'm not the only one that feels that way. You can go out and talk to almost anyone, and they'll tell you that we got to do something about this Roy Blunt. What are we going to do about this Roy Blunt? How are we going to handle this guy? Well, as you know, Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we've been discussing that for some time, and we decided that we needed to take a stand, and so we established Replace Roy. It's a grassroots effort that has really come on pretty strong with quite a few members since we've only been involved with this for, 2 weeks maybe. And we've got a lot of interest in it, not only from the grassroots movement and citizens, but we've got interest in it from the news media. They're looking and asking for stories. I'm appearing this Thursday morning on Mike Evans' radio show, American Voice, and discussing about Replace Roy and how we've got it established and what we're going to do to make some changes here in the state. And if I'm not mistaken, David, I think you're going to do a radio show yourself besides
that.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to talk with Eric Ferris this up-and-coming Sunday.
Yeah. So there's a lot of interest. I'm really amazed and surprised with the interest. Well, even some established Republicans feel it's time to do away with Roy and his Klan. So we're going to make that effort and see what happens. We don't know. You're only as successful as the people who are involved in the movement and that surrounds you. And we're looking for volunteers that are wanting to really get involved. We've got three or four folks that have asked to serve in a leadership position. So things are going quite well. But again, we've got 3 years to really sit down and figure out how are we going to go about this, what selection process we're going to use, how are we going to vet candidates. I mean, we've got a whole list of proposed candidates that is a possibility of running against Roy.
And I'm excited about the fact that some of the people on that list have actually joined the Replace Roy group.
Well, it is. One that joined, and they did so on their own, and that was John Brunert's wife. I believe her name is Joe.
Yes.
She had joined the other day, asking to be part of the group, and she's been a little active. And, she's got quite a bit of insight in what's going on in the Republican, shall we say, hierarchy. So that's real wonderful that she's done so. And we've also had Bob Parker come around. Now, like I said, we have a whole list. The last list I've seen that that has been suggested to me is Missouri Representative Eric Burleson, Paul Kirkman, of course, Bill Randles, and one of my favorites, Bev Randles, the wife
yeah.
of Bill Randles.
Yeah.
Of course, Bob Parker, I'm a big fan of his, a good friend of his. Jim Lemke, John Brunert. I supported John Brunert in the primary for that position. Now, one I'm really disappointed with, and that's someone suggested Peter Kinder. I'm not real pleased about that.
Yeah.
And I think that's just replacing Roy with another.
Exactly. Yeah, I think so too, yeah.
Yeah, we got another up-and-coming possibility, and he's been quite active here lately with the concealed carry permit information being given out with the DNR, and that's Missouri Senator Kurt Schaefer.
Oh, Schaefer, yeah.
His name has been suggested. I don't know a whole lot about him other than what I've been reading about the Department of Revenue investigation, but I kind of like that guy. And of course, our sweetheart Cynthia Davis, they've thrown her hat in the ring. I don't know if she's really interested or not.
I'm not sure Cynthia would run as a Republican for anything, Terry.
Well, you know what? Again, it doesn't necessarily. I never said that we had to replace him with a Republican. What I'm looking for, and I know what you're looking for, and we agree, I believe, wholeheartedly on this, is that we want a constitutional candidate that will go to Jefferson City, Washington, D.C., and represent the people of this state the way our founding fathers meant for them to represent.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, and I think everybody who's in this group is in tune to that, because the internet tax thing that we just brought up tonight is only the latest. I mean, long before the last election, we were talking about NDAA, we were talking about the Patriot Act, we were talking about Roy Bluntisms from way back there.
Well, we have been talking about Roy Bluntisms. I mean, good Lord, let's see. This is the guy that voted for TARP.
Yep.
Everybody remember TARP. He's also one that pushed and voted for the clunker.
Yeah, Cash for Clunkers,
cash
right.
Cash for Clunkers, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, and I just found this the other day that, and I've got to do some more studying on this, but I found on the internet some information that was tying Roy Blunt into the Terry Schiavo.
Oh, yeah.
Life and death situation.
Now, was he, I vividly remember that, but was Roy already the whip back then?
Yes. Well, let me see here. That's something I'm going to have to look up and do a little more studying on. I don't think he was. Well, let's see. Dave, I don't know. I don't want to say he wasn't wrong.
That was when, who was the clown that was Speaker of the House then? I can't remember, but yeah.
He's on tip of my tongue. DeLay.
DeLay, Tom DeLay, right.
Tom DeLay.
And there's pictures of Roy Blunt standing up there beside Tom DeLay carrying on about the federal government overriding Florida's state laws and taking away the rights that belong to the family. And oh my gosh, that was a disaster. And
well, you know, unfortunately, Roy Blunt is the senator that just keeps giving.
Yeah.
I mean, every other day he steps in it. I don't feel that he represents the people of Missouri. He represents the people on K Street. You know, his whole family are lobbyists.
Right.
You know, his son, the former governor of Missouri, they've all moved out to Maryland or Virginia, where I don't know exactly what state they're living in, but they're out there in the outskirts of Washington, D.C., all serving as lobbyists and raking in arms full of money. I don't condemn anybody for making money, but when you have influence like what they have with either a husband or a father who is a U.S. senator, and I just don't care for that. I mean, this is the type of thing that gives us the Monsanto Protection Act. And, you know, there's some who even claim that Monsanto wrote the bill themselves and just handed it to Roy Blunt.
Right.
Which was pushed through the Senate. It's time, as I said, it's time for a change.
It is.
Who and how, I'm not sure just yet. But we've got a lot of things happening as far as Replace Roy goes. You know, we've got the Facebook page and group, and we're on Twitter, and we are hashtag Replace Roy on Twitter. So anybody of the listeners would like to get involved there. We will be having a website coming up shortly, and I think it will be, my plans are, and if we get the right people involved here, is that it's going to be very informative and very active for people even across this country. I mean, it's just not Missourians that dislike Roy Blunt. There's tons of Republicans across this country in other states that don't care for Roy Blunt.
Or who are impacted, not just Missourians, who are impacted adversely by Roy Blunt. He sponsored this internet tax, for goodness sakes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as I said, he just keeps giving, and he keeps taking also, if you realize the truth. You know, the Heritage Organization just recently did an article explaining the ugly facts about the internet tax. And I advise all your listeners to go to heritage.com. I think it's on their Foundry page, and read this. I mean, it is just absolutely amazing. I don't think it's going to pass the House, at least wise I pray it doesn't pass the House. I know that from what I'm reading that John Boehner has some reservations on it, but we'll see.
And another thing that's become interesting here just in the last couple of months, Terry, is that you would have heard, I mean, you would have heard from the Republicans over and over again that we've got to get Roy nominated because you need the money, you need the power, because you're surely going to be going against Jay Nixon. But I'm telling you, with the DOR scandal, I'm not really sure that that we're going to be looking at Jay Nixon for anything past governor now.
No, I don't think we are either. And I'm thankful for Jay. I think he's done us well in our effort and being able to possibly put another candidate to run against Roy in a primary.
Exactly.
So, we can't condemn Wrong Way Jay for everything, but we can't thank him there. You know, but it's this whole state of Missouri is just amazing what's going on and what's happening. And I know that the Democrats like it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That way we can't concentrate on one certain candidate or one certain area. And, of course, the establishment Republicans like it that way, too.
Oh, yes.
Let's face it. As you know, I ran for office, and the establishment Republicans, they have their hand-picked people. Roy Blunt is one of them, and they want to protect him. And they don't want us concentrating on one simple candidate or one candidate. They want us to spread our efforts across the board. And I hope that people realize that with the Replace Roy program, that we're going to concentrate on Roy and Roy alone, and hopefully
right.
People will understand that this is the one guy we have to get. We can't spread all our resources and all our efforts across six or seven different campaigns. We need to concentrate on one, and the Tea Parties and the conservative groups, and well, the fair taxers, everyone out there, if they would just get involved, we can make an effort here, and we could possibly do it. Now, Roy's got a lot of money, let's face it. Monsanto's got unlimited funds. In fact, it only cost them, I think, $74,000 to get the Monsanto Protection Act passed.
Right.
That's what they gave to old Roy and his campaign account.
And that much again to Claire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Claire's a different story. She's going to be up there for another 6 years. We're not going to be able to do a thing about her except badmouth her every chance we get. But let's concentrate on Roy and see what we can do.
Yes. And, like we said, like we at
Hello?
Constitutional.
Are you back? I lost you.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm still here, Terry. Are you there now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. I was just explaining to folks that at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we have always contended that our fight is the primary. That's where we need to be fighting. that any time in the next couple of weeks we'd be filing any 501c3 things or anything like that at Replace Roy, but we'll be talking about how to raise funds. We'll be talking about maybe getting some top dollar people involved in this thing. We'll be talking about how to narrow this thing down to a candidate. Now, the last thing that oh, there's Terry back. That you, Terry?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for coming back. I was just explaining that money will be important, and so probably in the next year or so, we'll be thinking about how to get some financing together.
Well, we are. We're going to have to, again, we are a young, almost an unorganized group at the moment, but, you know, we're eventually going to have ourselves a treasurer. We're going to have some folks who know how to market. We're going to need some people to do some vetting for candidates.
Right.
We're going to need some people to go out and speak to the Tea Party groups, the
right.
Conservative groups, the school groups, the folks who are concerned about Common Core. Those are our kind of people, and we need to get the message out. And there's people there that are out there that can do that. We just need to get them involved.
Okay, so that's on Facebook. If you folks go to Facebook and search for, or don't even have to search for it because we're going to tell you where it is. It's at Replace Roy. There's both a group and a page. Like the page, join the group, get into the work. Let's get our sleeves rolled up. Have you got a name for the website yet, Terry?
Well, it's the same as Replace Roy.
Okay.
.com or
okay.
.org. I'm not sure which one we'll be using, okay. But we've got both of them.
Okay. And so you folks be checking on that. Between now and when the website's up and running, of course, you can go to that Facebook page. You can keep up with what's going on at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Terry's
and you know what? The most important thing here is not just keeping up with what's going on, but the most important thing is your input. We need your input on who do you feel would be a great replacement for Roy. Do you know items about Roy that the rest of the state should know about? I mean, let's face it, he has a long history, and we just need help in every area that we can.
And then we need your blood, sweat, and tears because, you know, this thing's got to get done, and it's got to get done by people. So we need you to roll up your sleeves and get involved. We understand that everybody can't spend 10 or 12 hours a day on this thing, But you know, you've got a couple hours on your weekend, whatever that is, or you've got a couple hours in the evenings, or during the days if you work nights, or you know, sometime if you're a full time mom or a full time stay at home dad, you've got some time you can give, and so we're asking for it. We're asking for you to get involved. We're asking for you to communicate with us and to be ready when the time comes to roll up your sleeves. Go to Replace Roy on Facebook. Subscribe to hashtag Replace Roy on Twitter and be looking for replaceroy.org. But before I let Terry go, I want to get in another little plug. Terry is the voice you hear. If you haven't heard it yet, you absolutely need to on the Gun Owners Minute, aren't you, Terry?
I am. I am the old patriot, as I call myself. I believe that there was a need for a pro-gun voice out there on the audio end. And what I do is, for those who haven't heard it, is I do a minute and a half to 2 minute segment every weekday on the issues concerning the Second Amendment and gun rights in this country.
Well, and that happens to be our next break. So if you folks will just hang on after we're done with Terry here, and in our next break, you'll hear one of Terry's Gun Owner Minutes. That's we try to make that my second break every show. So okay, thanks Terry. Thanks for coming along and sharing that with us. I'm really excited about being involved in this and helping you out as much as I can.
Well, I really appreciate, of course, you, David, and the folks that are listening, and you're doing a super great job on the radio, and you know, your numbers keep improving every week, and we at Grassroots Radio are proud of you. And we've got some more things coming up here shortly, too, during the summer months. So everybody keep listening for Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Oh, absolutely. And that'll be fine. And stay with us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Be looking for Replace Roy. And we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll have Tony Kirk here in a little bit. We thank Terry Varner very much for his time. And we'll see you guys on the other side of about a 2.5 minute break.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Here's some information compiled from College Politico. There's a lot of heated debate about guns and gun control right now, and that's why it's important to know the facts about guns. The U.S. has a lot of guns, yes, an estimated 270 million of civilian-owned firearms in America. That works out to about 89 guns for every person in America. In fact, the U.S. is number one in the world when it comes to gun ownership. However, the U.S. doesn't even crack the top 25 in gun murder rate. In life and death situations, civilians use guns to defend themselves more than 77% of the time. Civilian justifiable homicides by gun is 73.3%. For police, it's over 99% of the time. Americans use guns in self-defense more than you might think. 2.5 million estimated number of incidents of defensive gun use per year in the United States. A lot of newspaper ink has been used telling the dangers of rifles like the AR-15. But what do the statistics say? Well, all rifles, that includes the AR-15, were involved in fewer homicides in 2011 than blunt objects, fists, and knives. 1.5 as many homicides were committed with blunt objects and rifles. 2.2 times as many homicides were committed with fists than rifles. 5.2 as many homicides were committed with knives than rifles. Beyond that, rifles are used on a tiny percentage of all murders in the U.S. 2.6% of murders in 2011 involved rifles, including the AR-15s. Take these facts and use them next time you're explaining guns and gun control comes up. This has been the Old Patriot. Good day.
Conflict in every human heart, between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. Good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
All right, we're back. It was great to have Terry. I love it when Terry comes on. He's such a smart guy, and he gets right down to it. No holds barred, doesn't pull punches, and tells it like it is. Thanks, Terry. Terry mentioned a couple of things in that gun owner's minute that need to be remembered by each and every one of you as you go out to have these discussions with your friends and neighbors. Gun violence, that is violent crime in which a gun is involved, has been on the decrease every year for the last two decades. Did you know that? I mean, when you listen to the mainstream media, when you listen to the president talk, you would think that gun violent crimes in this country are increasing tenfold every year. Gun violence crime in this country has gone down every year for the last two decades. 2012 was no different. In 2011, for the first time, those numbers that Terry was talking about, the documented cases of a person defending themselves from a criminal with a handgun exceeded the number of crimes committed with a handgun. Now listen to that. In 2011, for the first time in that two decades, the number of people who defended themselves from a crime with a gun exceeded the number of times that a gun was used to commit a crime. So, there you have some numbers to deal with. Go to Terry's site, the Gun Owner's Minute, and pick up on that. I think he puts something out at least every other day, frequently every day. I promised tonight that I was going to talk about the Boston lockdown. I hesitated when it was hot. I love to wait. I haven't even gotten into Sandy Hook yet, as you know. Said the day after Sandy Hook, when everyone on both sides of the issue was going brouhaha, brouhaha, that I wasn't going to talk about it until we'd had time to let it cool down, to let tempers subside, to let both sides have their heated emotional debate. And then we would look back at it. Well, we did the same thing with Boston. There was a lot of chit-chat back and forth on the internet, in the social media, on the airwaves, on the phone lines, in the public, in the press conferences, in the everything. On both sides, the lockdown in Boston was a gross violation of the Constitution, was a crime against humanity, all the way to, the cops had every right to throw people down on the street if that's what it took to get this guy. After as many weeks as it's been, with me spending a little bit of time, not a lot of time, a little bit of time every day, reviewing things as they unfolded and looking into how voluntary this lockdown really was. And it was voluntary, but it was certainly enforced by intimidation. I've come to the conclusion myself that there was a degree of out-of-bounds action going on there. Now, it was not the degree that the doomsdayers are talking about. There was no martial law. Martial law is when the military takes over the law enforcement in an area, and an area is ruled by military law. There was no military involvement, in spite of the big, mean, military-looking machines that the police and federal agents were using, in spite of the big, mean, military guns and the Star Wars helmets and outfits that you see in the pictures, there was no direct or barely indirect involvement by the military in this action. So it was not a martial law, but it was a gross violation of the rights of citizens, and mostly, again, by intimidation rather than by there were no quote unquote warrantless searches. Okay, I've not found a one, and I say I've spent a little bit of time on this every day. There were some claims of warrantless searches, but all those claims have actually come to nil. There were no. But what there were searches by consent when that consent was clearly gathered after some intimidation. And that is clearly a violation of the constitutional freedoms that our founding fathers sent down to us. But now, I have got to ask you, if you're out here claiming that this was something that people ought to be put in jail for, or that people ought to be scared of, I've got to ask you now, on your side, Where is the line? You certainly don't think that if the law enforcement agencies of this country and of this state came across information that there was a nuclear device somewhere in a 10-block radius of St. Louis, in St. Louis, Missouri, that it would not be all right for the police, for federal law enforcement officials, to go in there and do whatever it took to find that. Okay, here it is. We have credible evidence that there is a nuclear device in St. Louis in this 10-block by 10-block area, and it's scheduled to go off tomorrow morning at 1 o'clock in the morning. What extent do you say the police should be able to go to, that the law enforcement should be able to go to find that nuclear device? So it really is just a matter of degree, isn't it? I mean, yeah, with the beauty of looking backwards at a situation, with the hindsight that we use when we do after-action thinking, we can say that probably this situation stepped over the line. There was a scared 17-year-old kid out hiding in a boat, bleeding to death. So, yeah, we can say in hindsight that this was probably – but if you say that, if you're going to go on the radio or if you're going to go in the press or if you're going to go shouting around your neighborhood that our police state is tromping all over our asses and beating us to death, you damn well better be able to tell me where you draw that line, because somewhere between that kid in that boat and a nuclear bomb in St. Louis scheduled to go off at 1 o'clock this morning, you're going to draw that line. You're not ready to sit there and tell me that the police ought to do nothing but cordon off an area or set up some kind of a barricade or blockade or we'll ask Tony when he comes along, what do you call it when the police just sit on the corner and watch traffic come and go for the suspect? You know, you don't just cordon off an area and then watch everything as though it were a normal patrol if you find out there's a nuclear bomb in there. So if you want to sit here 3 weeks after it happened and look at all the photos, as I've done, and investigate everything, as I've done, and come to some conclusion that, yes, maybe in this case, there was a little bit of stepping over the bounds, and I don't think there's any doubt about that, you damn well better be ready to tell me now, right now. It's 8 o'clock in the evening, and you get a tip that a bomb's going to go off at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Now, that's the kind of pressure we're dealing with in this situation. This isn't something that built up over 3 or 4 days. They got a tip. They reacted. Okay? So that situation is different than this situation, but what, how great it is for us to be able to sit here and make a judgment looking back at something 3 weeks old and say, oh yeah, that was a bad thing to do, when you're under that kind of pressure to make those kinds of decisions to protect innocent life. Yes, it was. It was a little over the line, but I fault no one. I fault no one for being over the line. I'm not scared to death. And quite frankly, I'm not ready to put myself in the position of being the one who says at 8 o'clock at night when the tip comes in, this is too far for this, but it's not too far for that. Are you? Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back. Tony's with us, and we're going to talk about the Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association. I've got a feeling that the night is hurt.
So dear, for peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic. You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I didn't see any method at all.
That's for you to get involved in Missouri Grassroots Radio Hour of Truth, 347-677-1835. We've got Tony Kirk in the studio. Before we get to Tony real quick, I want to back up that last promo. Secret Santa is the one and only thing Missouri Grassroots Coalition does all year where we ask you for money. There's no dues, there's no overhead, there's no salaries, there's no expenses. The only thing we ever ask you for money for is the Secret Santa. 100% of every dime you send to Secret Santa goes to Secret Santa. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button. Send us a dollar, send us $5, send us $15, send us $100. Do whatever you can to help us with this Secret Santa. We spread this thing out through the year. We know the hardest time for us to come begging you for money is November and December. So we give you a shot at this every day of the year. And so do it. Do it tonight while we're talking. Just open a new window in your browser. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button at the top. Click on PayPal and send us just a little bit to help out this worthy cause. The Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association is a group of people. They're having a convention. It's a regional / national convention. And ironically, they're having it in St. Charles, Missouri. If you're in St. Charles, you know why that's ironic, because you are one of the latest places in Missouri to say, Sheriff, we don't need no stinking sheriff. And so I think it's just rich that the CSPOA is going to St. Charles to have their meeting. Tony Kirk, Chief of Police, is here to talk to us now. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Appreciate you having us on.
Oh, no. We appreciate you coming. We appreciate CSPOA. Tell us a little bit about the organization, Tony.
Well, the association started up with Sheriff Richard Mack, who probably some of your listeners are well aware of, experience in law enforcement and the experience that he had fighting for Second Amendment rights and stands that he's taken. But the origination of the outfit was to pretty much draw together sheriffs being, elected officers of their counties, and peace officers, whether they're constables or marshals or police officers, and pretty much say, hey, we need to equip these guys with necessary information and public support to carry out the duties that's in accordance with the oath of the office. Whether it's the oath that you take as a sheriff, or for me, the oath I take as a police officer, actually what that entails, and for sheriffs especially, what kind of power that entitles them through the constitution of their state, what that allows them to do as the chief executive officer for that county, and how that might protect the citizens of this county from further federal encroachment on their rights.
It's important, isn't it, for people to realize that a sheriff is the only elected law enforcement officer in the whole spectrum.
It's pretty in some states, and I think actually in some places, maybe in Missouri, they still do like city marshals. So it's pretty rare. Like in Missouri, you don't have constables, but there are constables in some states. For example, me originally being from Mississippi, we did have elected sheriffs and we had some constables as well, but had very limited police powers. But it's one of the few times, and especially for places that don't have either a city marshal or don't have constables, that you actually have a role in the law enforcement aspect of your community. I mean, you get to vote for tax assessors and county board members and everything from your ambulance board to your fire board. But that's the one chance that they normally get to actually have some influence and some say-so in who's driving the law enforcement for their community.
And so this is because the sheriff is elected by you and me. I live in Greene County. We elect a sheriff. We elect a county sheriff. And because that person is elected by you and me, they are more than the police chief of the city of Springfield, who's hired by the city manager and the city council, more accountable to you and I for being there to protect us. Now, all police officers recognize their duty is to protect and serve you and I, but they are accountable to someone other than you, directly to someone other than you and I for that job. The sheriff, on the other hand, is accountable directly to you and I for what he or she does to protect you and me, whether that protection be from an armed criminal or from an infringement on our rights by someone who isn't authorized to take our rights. Tony?
Yeah, that's definitely correct. You know, the one thing a lot of people ask, especially now with the issue of like Second Amendment issues going on, and with Colorado being pretty much the flashpoint right now, as you see a lot of sheriffs really pushing back in that state, a lot of people will come to me as a police chief and be like, well, why don't we see more police chiefs coming out and making statements or, making press releases in regards to this? And I always point out to them that a sheriff doesn't have to get authority from anyone to act and to make a statement on a situation. They have the moral freedom to do that, where, like you said, a police chief, in most cases, has to have that approved by a board, maybe a mayor. So a lot of times you see police chiefs who are limited by pretty much what their board or what their mayor wants to be acted upon. So you'll see a lot of times, especially in a situation where we are now, in the issue of gun control, you see a lot of police chiefs come out for more gun control. But if you look at that, a lot of times you'll see that these are large urban areas, usually run by liberal politicians that have, people like Bloomberg in New York. So a lot of times the driving force behind the statement to represent the department is actually coming from the mayor or the board, where sheriff is able to actually issue his own letter and doesn't have to get approval from anyone. So, he pretty much can come out and say what he wants. And like you said, he's held accountable to the voters, and he knows that. So he'll make a statement on his own behalf and go with that.
And absolutely, and we're not, and listen, folks, I'm not saying anything bad about any police chief, regardless of where he or she stands on this issue. These, you got to recognize, if you work at the Dave Court beer keg factory, you don't just get to go out and say anything about the Dave Court beer keg factory that you want to. You get to come to me and find out what I want said about the Dave Court beer keg factory. And, it's the same way for a police chief. There's nothing bad about a police chief in St. Louis being in favor of gun control, because that police chief is hired. His livelihood, his very job depends on the fact that he works for someone else, other than directly for you and I. So alternately, though, there are a lot of police chiefs and police officers who, in speaking for their political heads, are in favor of standing up for the rights of people, and that's where the PO part of CSPOA comes in, right, Tony?
Yeah, and I think especially for my side of it, being a peace officer, years ago when I started in this career, I used to just think that being a sheriff or working for a sheriff's office would be horrible, because you have to be involved in a campaign every 2 or 4 years, and it seemed like it'd be very political. But then I think most people who stay in police work long enough realize that it's political, no matter if you're in the police department or if you're with the sheriff's office. The good thing about the sheriff is that you have, like you said, you have more control over actually what you say and the direction you want to go with the department. And people have to, you know, sometimes realize that, you know, a lot of states, you know, you can walk in one day as a chief, and if you've arrested the wrong person or said the wrong thing, you can be let go immediately.
That's right.
So, and I'm a strong supporter of my sheriff. My sheriff's John Cottle in Lincoln County, who was elected this past term, and he's done an excellent job so far. He actually attended the convention last year, right before the election. He actually went out to the convention in Las Vegas and was able to attend it before he was ever elected. So it showed me right away that he was definitely interested in the powers and authority that he would have through the state of Missouri, through the Constitution, and what you know, what avenues that he would be able to afford his citizens, you know, when it came to issues like now that we're facing with more federal laws and more federal encroachment on your livelihood, you know, at the city and at the county level. So, you know, we've got a great sheriff here. We've got some great sheriffs in Missouri. And, you know, as a police chief, you know, I contacted Sheriff Mack and said, hey, you know, I'm not a sheriff. I'm a police officer, but I think we got some good sheriffs in Missouri. I think that there's sheriffs who need to hear what's being said. And I think that Missouri right now is a hotbed for so many topics that this is a great time for people involved in law enforcement or elected officials to understand exactly what the sheriff his role is and what you know, what's available to him and what his expectations are and what our expectations are as voters and citizens in each county are. So I think Missouri was just a great spot to try and plan to have the conference right now.
And for those people who want to flash back with us a little bit, Sheriff Mack is famous for his stand, and things are starting to hit the fan in Colorado now. But we can flash back just a year and a half to Arizona and see what kind of an important role a sheriff plays there in standing the ground for the people who are being trampled on by either federal or sometimes state laws.
Yeah, and that's the thing is with the sheriff. You know, especially look at somebody like Richard Mack, you know, for those if he was involved in what was in the Mack versus United States case, later became Prince
right.
Versus United States, which was a lawsuit that was against portions of the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. And he took that all the way to the Supreme Court and then ended up winning 5-4. So, you know, he was a sheriff that was able to stand up and go after something within the Brady law that was, you know, affecting everyone. And you've got Sheriff Joe out in Arizona now that's doing the same thing with issues that there's so many things right now that go on in the federal government coming into the counties and coming into the cities. And what we're starting to see, I think, nationwide right now, and I think it's going to be a horrible trend, is I believe that people within the federal government and high levels of the state government realize the power that a sheriff has. And they realize to get some of the things that they want accomplished that they're going to have to get sheriffs out of the way in some places. So I think that's why you're seeing places now that are wanting to get rid of elected sheriffs, whether it's, you know, county committees wanting to do it, or if it's, you know, people within the state wanting to do it, or if it's the threat of federal intervention. And you've seen all three of them. We're seeing county boards now that are pushing to take away the citizens' right to vote for their sheriff. You actually are seeing state attorney generals coming out and saying that they don't believe that sheriffs have a right to arrest or any enforcement power. And then you, on the federal level, you've actually got, you know, state legislatures in some states that are saying, hey, if a sheriff refuses to assist federal law enforcement in their county, then we want this, you know, either the Secret Service or FBI to come in and arrest them. So at that point, you know, why do we even have sheriffs, or why do we have local police? Why don't we just have a federal police force with local offices, if you're going to go that way with it. So I think people need to really realize what they have and elect a sheriff and make sure that right's not stripped from them.
Yeah, there's been some talk, and it's been just kind of quiet little talk in Missouri. I think it could easily come to a head here, especially with the things that have happened in some of the counties in Missouri, in the next one or two legislative sessions to actually constitutionally define and even direct counties to have a sheriff.
Yeah, and I think right now, like I said, you know, you look, we had one county in the state that had a county police force, which was St. Louis County, and that's an example where he's appointed by the board, and they do have a quote-unquote sheriff that oversees bailiff actions and court actions. Here in St. Charles, where we're going to have the convention at, you had a sheriff who was a longtime member of the department who is undetermined yet on whether or not he's going to run to get the appointment for the county, what will be now the St. Charles County Police, or if he'll stay on as sheriff. But their line of thinking was, is the sheriff had went to the board and explained to them that for the best future of the department, the best future of the county, it would be best if the county board actually nominated and appointed a county police chief. That was done pretty quickly, I think within 2.5 months before the election, so there wasn't a really good chance for people to really discuss it and word to really get out. The reason why I say that is I had so many people come to me in St. Charles County borders us to the south and ask my opinion, and there were so many varied ideas of what that was going to do. What ends up happening is that you will have now two departments. You will still have a sheriff's office that will see nothing but bailiff actions, service of paper, and you'll see a jail. But then your actual enforcement sheriff, which will be now a county police, will be appointed by the board. So people were confused. They thought at first that the new ruling or the new law was going to allow the sheriff's department to have more patrol. There were others that thought that it was going to create two departments, but they'd still be able to elect the sheriff that was going to be in charge of law enforcement. So people were very confused on the issue, and it only passed by just over 1,000 votes. It was a very close election. And I think it's very, very scary and very sad to know that St. Charles County now has lost that right to elect their enforcement sheriff by roughly 1,100 votes out of around 162,000. That was barely over 50%, if I recall. So, I think that's something that you could see county by county. A lot of people that were pushing it in St. Charles County, and I'll say on behalf of a lot of the deputies I know down there, they actually were against this. They wanted it to stay as one department and understood the role of the sheriff down there. Now you've got St. Louis County doing that, now St. Charles County. So your next question is, well, which county's bordering them? Well, they don't think it's a good idea. And I think it's scary to think that could be the direction that all the counties are going to try and take now.
Absolutely. I know at Missouri Grassroots Coalition and here on Missouri Grassroots Radio, even though I'm down here in Greene County, I know there was a lot of hair tearing over the St. Charles thing, because Lisa Payne Nager, who is the culture vigilante, has Missouri Grassroots Radio show on Wednesday nights. She was out there every night in the Save Our Sheriff campaign, doing road work, doing door to door work, doing flyers, trying to get that thing heard about, and that's exactly what she was saying, and that some of the deputies that she had on talking about this were saying is that this thing just came flying out of nowhere. I mean, there was no time. There was no time to organize any kind of opposition to this. They just bulldozed this thing through.
And if I remember correctly, I think that it actually was put towards the board, or even first got presented to the board, I believe in September, the early part of September. So
yeah.
For such a drastic change, you would think that a lot more time would have went into researching it. I know that some statements that were made was, well, this will save the county money. I've never really seen any government department become two departments in which it saved money. I've never really seen that. So this will be a first if it happens. But it was disturbing. And like I said, I know the sheriff, and our county works with St. Charles County on various different units and, task force type endeavors. But the one thing that really kind of bothered me, or I guess I found upsetting, was one of the statements that was made during the campaign for it was that with the county going the way it was, is that this was something that needed to be put into place to make sure that the county always had a qualified law enforcement officer as sheriff. And you can take that two ways. One is, well, either you relied on the people of St. Charles County to elect you into the office as every sheriff before you. So everybody has been fine with them electing a sheriff before. If you don't trust people to elect your sheriff, then do you trust them to elect the county treasurer or county auditor or any other county office? Why is it that the sheriff is the only one that we need to make sure that the board is appointing and not the actual people? And I guess secondly is, you know, if you put that faith in the voters before they elect you, then why can't you have the faith that they're going to keep electing good people into office, you know, after you're gone? So I thought that was very disturbing on how that that statement came across to a lot of people.
Let me ask you a question just as an aside here to veer off course just a little bit, because I'm curious and don't know the answer to this. I believe that the law requires, and I know in Greene County we do get our CCW certificates from the sheriff. Do you still do that in St. Charles? Do you still go to the sheriff for that?
And I guess I'm not sure who's going to be in charge of that now. I guess that will still go to – that may go to the county police now. I'm not sure if that's going to get turned over to the sheriff. And I'm not sure if they've even decided who all is getting what on those aspects of that. Last I heard, they were appointing a board that was going to oversee the transfer of authority back and forth. And I'm not sure exactly where they are with that now. You know, again, I think it was done so quick and so fast that I don't think that either side, you know, really – either one of them had a good chance to put together an argument to say, hey, this is a great idea, or no, this isn't a great idea. I think if nothing else, people should have said, hey, you know, we might be jumping in this a little too fast. But,
right.
You know, again, I think the people in Missouri, you know, you've had one county do it. And a lot of people say, well, you know, isn't this the big new thing nationwide? You know, St. Louis County did this. And actually, it's not. The way St. Louis County operates, you know, a lot of that transferred from St. Louis City being an independent city and not part of the county.
Right.
County police, or what you call metropolitan police, happen whenever all the cities within the county join together and join a metropolitan police department. Or either one city, for example, maybe say Indianapolis, grows to such a size that it almost covers an entire county, and then they'll combine county and police services. It's very rare that you actually split your sheriff's department into the way they've done it now. So it's, you know, especially in the Midwest. So, like that, I would just be fearful of, you know, like you said, does Greene County think it, you know, is a good idea now that St. Louis and St. Charles both are doing it? Does, you know, Buchanan County, Clay County, Jackson County, Cape Girardeau, you know, which county next goes with the idea that this is a good idea because, you know, these other two counties are doing it? And again, I think you have to ask yourself, why aren't you able to vote for a sheriff, but you're able to vote for every other position in a county?
including the county council that appoints the sheriff.
you have enough faith. You have enough faith in them to appoint the vote on people who are going to appoint the sheriff, but you don't actually trust them to make a good decision on the sheriff. So, like I said, I think it's just one of those things where you've seen different attacks on the sheriffs, and you know, another one is you know, he'll be at the convention on May 31st here in St. Charles, but I like for people, if they can, to take a little bit of time and look at the sheriff that who's just been a great leader out on the East Coast. But out in Delaware, there's an attorney general that's involved in a situation out there right now with a sheriff. And the attorney general is a Biden, and that would be Joe Biden, our vice president's son. And the sheriff in Sussex County is Jeff Christopher in Delaware. And pretty much what happened was, in deference to the Delaware Constitution, the state with the Attorney General were looking to pretty much strip the powers of arrest for the sheriff and the House bill in the state of Delaware, which pretty much means the sheriff couldn't help you at all unless you were just wanting to have paper served or something like that. So they were going to strip all the sheriffs in Delaware of their powers of arrest. And that was pushed through by the attorney general there, which is, like I said, Joe Biden's son. And he issued an opinion that pretty much based on questionable authority and pretty much attempted to further strip the sheriffs of their constitutional powers out there. So Sheriff Christopher is going to be here on the 31st in St. Charles County. So at the convention, and hopefully we'll be able to get his story out more. And just another example of if they think that a sheriff is going to stand between them and the ability to enforce some actions or getting laid down the road, then what's the best way to get them out of the way? They either strip their power or just get rid of the office completely.
So that really then, I mean, the bottom line, Tony, is and then we're going to turn this thing around and talk about your actual convention here for a minute. But the bottom line on this trend really is not about saving money, and it's not about not trusting people to vote. It really, really is about what we started this whole conversation with, and that is it is a danger to the political machine that there is someone out there accountable to the people for protecting their rights.
Yeah, and I think that you see that in a lot of places. I think you'll see, of course, I'm not saying that every county board in the country is like this, but, you know, I think that there's a lot of places where you have people who understand that the sheriff has a lot of authority, a lot of power. If you're going to, you know, have a lot more sway in your county or power over what happens in your county, the best way sometimes to have the ability to enforce what you want enforced or the direction you want something to go is to have the ability to have the control of the law enforcement. And if you're the one appointing the sheriff and that's your highest law enforcement officer in the county, then you're pretty much going to be able to do what you want if you have that much control, if you take that, you know, away from the hands of the citizens. So, again, you know, people have to be aware that, you know, if your rights are being eroded little by little, your right to vote for something such as of a sheriff, for you to lose that power is definitely an erosion. It's something people need to really wake up and start watching out for.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, still
okay. So there we were. Here what we were doing is we were turning the conversation, and I'm sorry about the problem there, into you telling us about this this big meeting that you got coming up.
Well, we're looking at September 31st, and actually a little bit on June 1st, but Friday the 31st is going to be the main aspect of it. We're calling it the Heartland of America Convention. In the last couple of years, the convention has been out in Las Vegas. There is a lot of information going on and exchanging of ideas out in California and Oregon and Washington. A lot of states that some people sometimes consider liberal or actually have a lot of very constitutional sheriffs out there. But we wanted to bring it out here this year. And as I had heard about Sheriff Mack and had heard about Sheriff Cobble coming back and talking about the association, I got interested and contacted them and said, hey, you know, can we look at maybe bringing this out to Missouri right now? Because we have so many different flashpoints and things going on in this state. So many people are becoming active politically and just you know, community-wise over, you know, everything from Second Amendment issues, Tenth Amendment issues, whether it's raw milk sales to Common Core, you know, you name it, people in Missouri, or, you know, whether you're, you know, in the southwest corner where you guys are or all the way up to the you know, Clark and Lewis counties and, you know, Rawls, which is north of us, and down to the Booth Hill. You know, you hear people all the time, you know, with different different things that are going on that they're gaining interest in. And same way with the sheriffs, whether it was something that was going on here in St. Charles County or if it's just, you know, trying to see exactly where we're going to stand on the issue. So we contacted them and we decided to have it here in St. Charles. That way it gave a good location for some of the other states here in the Midwest. And we started reaching out to a lot of the sheriffs. And what we're going to do is we're going to get together that morning on the 31st at 7 a.m., start having a breakfast and registration. We're going to actually start the convention at around 8:15. There'll be a lunch at noon. That night we're having an awards banquet. The next day on the 1st, we're planning on having some breakout sessions. And those are going to be several different topics that people are welcome to come and join as part of as well. And this is totally free to any and all public officials. If you're a school board member, if you are the AMLIS board, you name it, if you are on the ballot somewhere in the state of Missouri to run for office, if it's a central committee for a party, you know, or a county board member, if you had to be elected, you're free. Your spouse is free. If you are a sheriff, a peace officer of any type, you're free. If you're, you know, whether you're a patrolman, the chief, or you're a deputy or the sheriff. And what we're trying to do is we want as many people as we can there that are in law enforcement and are in elected positions to hear what we're having to say. And, excuse me, for the general public, it's $150 per person. It's $200 if you bring two or more people. And that covers the minutes to the conference, all the education materials, and three meals, which, you know, the breakfast, the lunch, and then, of course, the dinner that we're going to have that night. And we've got some great speakers lined up. And the main thing is we wanted not just this to be for law enforcement and for elected officials. We want citizens to come because we want these sheriffs in, say, Missouri that are involved in this to show that people are supporting them, that they're gonna say, hey, if you're going to stand up for our constitutional rights, then we're going to support you. And so we're hoping that we can start having that communication between the citizens and the elected officials and the sheriffs and the police officers. But, for example, we've got Stuart Rhodes is going to be speaking that morning. Of course, Stuart Rhodes was one of the founders of the Oath Keepers, You've got Michael Pruka. Some people may know Pruka. See, ran for the Constitution Party back a couple of years ago. He runs a group called the Institute for the Constitution, and is a great speaker on that issue. I'll be speaking along with Sheriff Joey Kyle down at Christian County. We also have Police Chief Mark Kessler out of Pennsylvania. Sheriff Sam Page out of Rockingham County, North Carolina, is going to be there. And then right before lunch, David Clark, Jr. is the sheriff out of Milwaukee County. And some of you may be familiar with him. He was the African-American sheriff up in Wisconsin that pretty much came out and said, hey, you know, citizens need to be able to arm themselves and need to be able to prepare to defend themselves because police and sheriffs just can't be everywhere all the time. And, of course, being in Milwaukee, you know, he kind of caught some flack from the liberals in the state of Wisconsin about that, but he was very spot on about that. So Sheriff Clark will be there, and then that evening at the awards dinner, Sheriff Clark's actually going to be presented the award for Sheriff of the Year. So I'm looking forward to meeting him personally myself. Larry Pratt's going to be there with Gun Owners of America. Sheriff Mack, of course, with the CSPOA. Peggy Littleton is a county commissioner from El Paso County out in Colorado, and she's going to be there talking about everything that went on with the issue of gun control in Colorado, and she's going to talk about state sovereignty and the 10th Amendment force there. And then Sheriff Jeff Christopher, who I talked about earlier from Sussex County, Delaware. We also have Joe Wolverton from the John Birch Society, Michael Zulo, who is the chief investigator for Joe Arpaio out of Maricopa County, Arizona, and Chris Ann Hall, who's an attorney and constitutional expert. And then that night for our awards dinner banquet, our main speaker is going to be Congressman Steve Stockman. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners probably aware of him out of the 36th District in Texas. So, I mean, it's from that morning to that evening, we got some great speakers lined up. We're expecting to have two or three state congressmen and senators from the state here. I know Representative Paul Kirkman is already said he's going to be there. And then we do have some others from the state that are going to be there as well. So really looking forward to it. I think that we have an excellent lineup that covers a lot of the issues. And I think whether you're an elected official or someone involved in law enforcement or just a citizen, I think it's a great lineup that people should be able to come and enjoy.
So that's, tell us again, that's the 31st of this month here.
Yep, 31st of May.
And then bleeding over into the 1st of June, which is a Saturday.
Yeah, because there's gonna be some groups there that are represented that I think are gonna kind of have some breakout sessions. I'm not sure all which ones are planning to have it, but I think we're gonna talk about on the breakout sessions things dealing with media, how to interact with media, some of the issues that we're talking about, and not just you know, law enforcement's interaction with media, but for example, you know, you as a citizen, how you can interact with media on issues such as Second Amendment rights or, you know, 10th Amendment issues. So it's, you know, there's a wide range of topics that we can learn from, especially right now when you look at things. You know, my wife's really involved in Common Core stuff right now, and a lot of people in Lincoln County. And you start talking about 10th Amendment issues and state sovereignty, and that's not just an issue for Second Amendment gun rights. That's, you know, your kids in school and everything else that involves with, whether it's, you know, you're a dairy farmer in the state of Missouri and you're selling raw milk or cheese. So the federal influence over, you know, all aspects of our life are covered in that. So it's not just a conference for police officers on how to enforce the law. It's really a conference on what the Constitution is, what the oath of the office is. You know, your right to keep and bear arms is going to be involved in that, but also state sovereignty and 10th Amendment issues. So, and you get to hear from some great people like Stuart Rhodes with the Oath Keepers, Michael Pruka, you know, with the Institute of Constitution. So, I think some people that not only have great ideas about what we're talking about, but then people who are also on the front lines of this, like Sheriff Clark and Sheriff Christopher and Peggy Littleton out of Colorado. So yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of aspects of it, not just theory and not just ideas of what this means, but actually how that's being put in play right now on the front lines.
Great. So so what time do you kick off there on Friday?
That morning, we're going to start registration and breakfast at 7. We're going to try to have opening ceremonies at 8:15.
Okay.
And we're still getting sheriffs lined up. We're still getting, like I said, you know, if you have a state representative or a state senator, you know, give them a call, try and get them here. Like I said, I know we've already got 4 or 5 that are signed up. And I think at least 2 of them are going to be able to probably get, you know, a couple minutes to speak, because I know there's some really good legislation right now in the state of Missouri. That's being put out there, so we're hoping that gets passed this week. But Hopefully for the Missourians, we'll be able to kind of update them on that a little bit. But then, like I said, we've got sheriffs from Kentucky all the way out to North Carolina, then all the way into Utah. A representative with the Utah Sheriff's Association will be there. Their Sheriff's Association actually came out with a letter that had every sheriff except the one in the state of Utah all signed it, pretty much telling Obama they would not take part in any type of gun grab in their state. So they're going to receive an award for our State Sheriff's Association of the Year. So it's not just some, you know, an issue that you're going to hear, you know, from what's going on in Missouri, but you're also going to see how this is actually playing out all over the country right now. You know, Charles Key is a former state legislator from Oklahoma. He's I consider him expert on state sovereignty and state nullification. He's going to be there to speak as well. So I think that's a lot of issues right now that they're touching a lot of aspects of our life. And I think, you know, you got Terry Varner, who was on earlier, and, you know, Terry comes across these issues with other, you know, focuses that he talks about. So, you know, and again, as someone who's involved in law enforcement and someone who strongly supports a lot of these sheriffs that we're going to have here, you know, I really just ask all of you that are involved to, you know, come on out, spend a day here with us in St. Charles and show these people that you support them, make sure that they understand they do have the people behind them.
Okay, so reviewing quickly, for any law enforcement officer or any elected official, it costs a big zero to go to this thing, right?
Correct.
And for me, it's $150?
If you're just a citizen that wants to come and enjoy the day with us, if you're by yourself, it's $150. If you can get a friend to come along with you, it's $100 each.
Okay.
Again, if you're elected at all, you're free as well.
Okay, so bring a friend. Just cost you another $50 to bring a friend along, and I personally will be calling Representative Burleson and Senator Dixon to see if they're going to go. It doesn't cost them anything to go, and I know there's going to be a lot of valuable information there for the people who represent me in Jefferson City. So I'll be interested in whether they're going to be able to make it along. I encourage you folks to do the same thing. Call your representative, call your Missouri State Senator, find out if they can make it to this thing, because an understanding at the legislative level of what's happening in law enforcement at the local level is imperative in my mind.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, especially for the listeners here in Missouri, you know, We've got Sheriff Joey Kyle down in Christian County, you know, just up there next to you guys in Springfield. But we're also looking to get, you know, the sheriffs around there, too. You know, if you can get on the phone the next couple of days and, you know, give a call over there to Sheriff Delay over in Lawrence County. I know that he's been pretty strong in relations to the 10th Amendment and constitutional issues for the sheriff. You've got Sheriff over in Webster County as well. So I think down in Berry County, you've got, I think, Epperly. So give them a call. You know, if you're far over as Texas, Shannon, Oregon, those counties over that way, you know, call and say, hey, it's one day. You know, drive up, you know, and spend the day with those guys and see what they have to say. Because, like I said, we're hoping to get sheriffs from all over the state, not just one area. And right now, I think we've got pretty much most of the state covered, except maybe just the very northwest corner. But, you know, if you've got a sheriff in Polk County and he can pick up the sheriff in Dallas County, then let them ride up together. But definitely give them a call. You know, like you said, call your state representative, call your state senator. I think right now the three of the state representatives from St. Charles County are already signed up. So I was very pleased to see that they're all involved. My state representative is one of them that has signed up. So I'm glad to see that he's involved as well. And to me, it shows that they're interested in what's going on with us as well. So I think, you know, the more that you call these sheriffs and these elected officials, you let them know that this is something you're interested in. I think that it shows that that's something they need to be interested in.
Okay, and then one more thing, real quick. If we've got a law enforcement officer, a sheriff or sheriff's deputy or a police officer listening in tonight. Or who's a friend of someone listening in tonight who doesn't know or who wants to know how to become part of CSPOA, how do they do that?
Right, just go onto the internet to cspoa.org, and that will bring you to the website. You will be able to click on a link that will on there for the convention. It'll talk about registering now for the Heartland of America Convention. If you click on that, that'll give you kind of a rough breakdown of the large group meetings on Friday, the breakout sessions on Saturday, and you'll actually be able to print a rough listing right now of who is scheduled and for what times as well. And you can register. If you click on the Register Now page, you can go in and fill out your information. There is a drop-down menu, and if you are going to be a sheriff or peace officer, a public officer, anything like that, you can click on it. It'll register you up, and then we're hoping that everybody kind of pre-registers ahead of time, just so we're trying to make sure we have everything set up with the number of people that we're expecting.
Okay. CSPOA in general, is that a dues-paying organization?
Yes, it is. We do have dues on it, relatively cheap. We also have a lot of people who are donating. For example, a lot of that money goes to efforts such as this, where we try and get out and get the information to the officers, to the sheriffs, and to public officials. We also try to help things. For example, Sheriff Christopher, I talked about earlier from Delaware. He's actually filed a lawsuit against the state of Delaware involving that. So we actually tried to raise money for him as well for that lawsuit. So there on the page, you'll see companies that have been sponsoring us. You can also click on books and media that that talk about some of the issues that we talk about. And there is a blog as well. So you'll kind of see what the CSPOA is about. We're also on Facebook. And like I said, we hope that we can get the people out there who are listening to get in behind us. You know, you were talking about earlier about Boston. There's a disconnect, I guess, in communication at some degree between law enforcement nowadays and citizens. And I think a lot of times, whenever we talk about gun control issues, recently a poll came out that showed that almost 90% of police officers agree that, more gun restrictions is not going to be the answer.
Right.
So I think your regular line officers and your line deputies are very much in favor of Second Amendment rights. And but at the same time, I think that the government has been out of control on some things to where anybody who is touched by government is kind of tainted. And a lot of times that also rolls down to your police and to your sheriffs.
Right.
So I think that there needs to be a lot of open communication and ideas between law enforcement and the public. And I think that an organization like ours really opens that up and starts getting those ideas and that communication moving.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And not just law enforcement officers, but law enforcement officers for sure, because they're the people that us common folks have day-to-day contact with out on the street. But this general distrust of government that seems to be taking root in the nation is certainly being felt by everyone in the government service, whether they're in a legitimate position like a law enforcement officer or in an illegitimate position like a stormtrooper for the Environmental Protection Agency. We certainly want, I certainly want to let you know, Tony, Chief Kirk, that we appreciate everything that law enforcement officers do for us every day. Day in and day out, 24 hours a day. By the same token, any law enforcement officer who's worth his weight in salt is going to tell you folks out there that 911 is 15 minutes away. And so there's a period of time in there where when the guy's banging down your door, you're pretty much expected to take care of yourself.
Yeah, and I think that most people, especially law enforcement officers now, that I know, and I mean, I say the ones I know, I'm talking 99.9% will tell people that, we're stretched thin. And,
yeah.
And a lot of people, I got involved in this job many years ago, and it was to truly help my community. And I know that there's different things that happen day by day throughout the country that we have to battle, whether it's, the perception of an over-militarized police force to whether it's, raids that go bad. So as these things happen, we have to, recover from these mistakes, and we have to try and build that trust back up with the public. But I think, I think most of us got into it to help the community. And I think at the same time, as the role of law enforcement has changed so much in the almost 20 years I've been involved in it now, at the same time, I think that I'm at the point in my career where I think that we that are involved in law enforcement need to have to step back for just a second and readjust our communication with the public and really see which way we're going with things and what we're involved with. And I think that, like I said, that whenever people start seeing things like in Boston, and like you said earlier, I don't think the thought of that day was, let's go out and run through all these houses and see if we gather evidence for the crimes in these houses. I think that, you know, sometimes that there's a good intention. And as my father used to say, you know, sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And it's a situation that was new, that they acted on something, and like I said, in hindsight,
absolutely.
You can pick out a lot of things that you would definitely want to change. I mean, I can say now as, you know, as a law enforcement officer, there was things that I thought could have been done a lot better, would have done a lot differently. But it's things that we have to start thinking of ahead of time. But at the same time, I think that as people have a growing mistrust of the government, when you start seeing your law enforcement officers look like, you know, a military unit, you start wondering which way they're going with that. So, and I think that may be the fault for us a little bit in law enforcement, the fact that maybe we have seen that image come out too often. And I think we maybe should start readjusting how often we appear in tactical outfits, how often we play that role. And also, like you said earlier, how often we are involved in federal stuff. You know, for example, now if a USDA comes in to shut down a farm in Missouri, or if another federal agency wants you to come in to assist, is this something that we really need to be involved with? And one thing I've always had talked about was the federal government doesn't want us involved at all in illegal immigration. And they pretty much come out and told us, you know, don't be involved with it. You know, we don't want you involved with it. But whenever they want us to be involved in something else, they'll let us know. So maybe it's time is for county and city officers to start kind of realizing where we need to play our roles in that. And it's a fine line. And a lot of people need to start, you know, and I think have to start realizing that the federal government, you know, has grant money, and a lot of the departments statewide, and whether it's a county or a city police department, that rely on a lot of grant money are sometimes going to be choked by those purse strings.
Right.
So, you know, you should sometimes, you know, you have to stay in contact with your local sheriff or your local boards and see how much this money could be tied back to county, you know, their county programs are tied back to federal grants. I've always said that I always thought that if the federal government was ever going to take over local law enforcement to some degree, it was going to be through the use of monetary funds. And that's why I think that there needs to be really good communication between the citizens to, you know, explain, you know, what we're going to do, what our aspects and law enforcement is, and have the people tell us what their expectations are as well. So I think that's why you see a lot of the comments you see after Boston. You know, again, some stuff was done, you know, wrong, you know, maybe a rush to get something done and stuff done in the wrong places. But at the same time, I think that if we had better communication with citizens, yeah, I think we would be able to respond to things like that a little bit better.
Well, absolutely. And like I said, you know, we're looking back at this thing 3 weeks ago. Yeah, I don't want to be the one in the position in Boston to make the decision about what to do when the call comes in and there's some guy who may or may not have an explosive vest hiding somewhere in a haystack. And someone expects me to do something about it.
Yeah, and like I said, it's, you know, the situation I have in Boston is it was a new situation, but, you know, I think now that it's happened, you know, law enforcement across the country has to say, okay, in the future, what's a better way to do this? And you have to try and learn from the mistakes, and you have to make sure that the people understand that you're evaluating what happened and how you might do it differently, because I think a lot of people's fear is, well, if we have went that far this time, the next time there's a shooter in the area or a bank robber, you know, are they going to start checking all the houses? So, again, I think it's just that worry of the government that, and again, anything that's tainted by the word government now, and that includes local law enforcement. I think that was one thing that probably just in the last couple of years I've really realized is that the worry of that has actually went all the way down to such a degree in the local level that where your local police and your sheriffs have to really start being more understanding of that now and really kind of planning and being knowledgeable of that.
Okay, Tony, we're running short of time here, so I want to wrap up at CSPOA.org.
Correct.
It's free for law enforcement officers and for any elected officials on the 31st of July. It's the CSPOA.
Okay.
31st of May, that's what I meant, I'm sorry, 31st of May, 8 o'clock in the morning. Citizens are welcome and encouraged to attend for $150 for the entire day, including three great meals. an exciting lineup of speakers of renown. For 50 extra bucks, they can bring a friend.
Yep, and like I said, this is at the Maristar Casino, so it's not going to be a box lunch. It's going to be a nice breakfast, nice lunch, and then like I said, the awards dinner that night. Congressman Steve Stockman out of Texas is an incredible speaker, congressman that's worked on a lot of liberty issues as well. Between him and Sheriff Clark being there, just a lot of people that you can get a lot of great information from. So again, if you're a citizen out there and you're listening, and this is something that you worry about your local law enforcement and what their role is going to be in nullification issues, states' rights issues, federal infringements on your rights, this is the time that you need to get involved.
Exactly. Okay. Thanks very much for coming, Tony. We might ask you to come back a time or two here in the next little while. Would you want to do that?
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I'd like to have Sheriff Matt come on with us and have him kind of tell about his story and how he got everything kind of involved in the CSPOA.
Okay, we're working on that for next week. Tony and I are working on maybe trying to get Sheriff Mack in here next Monday night. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate your time, and it's been a great, great talk.
Thank you for having us on again.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap up for the night, and we're going to tell you what's coming up the rest of this week. I'm Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Chat we had with Tony of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association. Don't miss their big convention in St. Charles at the Ameristar Casino. It's Friday, the 31st of this very month, bleeding over into the 1st with some breakout sessions. It's free if you're a police officer or any kind of a law enforcement officer, a sheriff, a deputy, a police chief. It's free if you're an elected official. Call your senator, call your representative, call your sheriff, and see if they're going to this thing. Encourage them to. There's going to be a great lineup of very knowledgeable people there. Starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. Go to CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA for Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Association.org and get signed up for that. All right. We had a great show all around. Terry Varner was here earlier. If you're just tuning in, you want to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. That's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the MGC radio button and listen to the podcast of the entire show. Terry talked with us earlier about the Replace Roy organization that's just now forming up. Got 4 years of hard work ahead of us if we're going to replace Roy Blunt, a traitor to everything constitutional in Washington, D.C. in 4 years. So we've got some hard work ahead of us there. We talked once again with Chief Tony Kirk about the convention and about CSPOA in general. Tomorrow night, you'll want to tune in at 7 o'clock, once again, to Missouri Grassroots Radio Network and hear Homefront with our friend Cynthia Davis. And always entertaining always enlightening show from the First Lady of the Constitution in the state of Missouri, Miss Cynthia Davis. She'll be talking to us about how assaults on liberty and assaults on the Constitution are also assaults on our family and our very way of life. On Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, comes along. A lot of good talk there about Common Core, a lot of good talk about education in general, a lot of good talk about Agenda 21. Lisa is the culture vigilante, and she will talk to you weekly about how the progressive and socialist world is threatening the very culture that we've come to know. There's a culture shift required of you and of me before we can put our arms around this progressive system, and we are being forced, or attempts are being made anyway, to force us to embrace that culture shift. Lisa's on the top. She's on the cutting edge of telling you where that culture shift is coming from, what you need to do to fight it off. On Thursday, Kevin Harnett is the hillbilly. He comes along with his hillbilly logic, just some general, pretty cool stuff. I'm really excited about Saturday nights. It'll be the second installment of our brand new series, The Fair Tax Show. If you missed last week's, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the podcast for that. We talked about exactly, do you know exactly how much tax you're paying? Where did the income tax come from? Why are we stuck with this archaic and Marxist form of taxation when there are so many better ways to do it? This next week, we're going to talk about how the government keeps you from feeling the pinch. How the government keeps you from realizing how much of your money they're stealing. We're going to talk about where withholding came from, and we're going to talk about what a devastating effect this withholding thing has on you, not just the money that you lose, but on the very attitudes that you have toward your own work and your own money. It's become just so much part, again, of the culture. We're going to talk about that and some of the evils of that. But that's the Fair Tax Show on Sunday nights at 7 o'clock with yours truly. Next Monday, Obama drones willing and the creeks don't rise. We'll be back to visit you. If the drones come and get me before then there'll just be some dead air there on Monday nights. But I'll do my best to avoid that. You do your best to avoid the IRS coming after you because of who you are politically. And if everything goes well, we'll all survive till next Monday night. We'll be back. We're going to try to get Sheriff Mack here to talk with us. I've had a great time tonight. We had a great show. I want to thank once again Terry Varner and Chief Tony Kirk for coming along and visiting us. We'll talk to you folks on Saturday night, the Fair Tax Show, and on Monday night, hopefully with Sheriff Mack. Catch Cynthia on Tuesday, catch Lisa on Wednesday, catch Kevin on Thursday. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I'm Dave. It's been the Hour of Truth. We love each and every one of you. Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time.